When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
When Kim Jong-nam was detained at Tokyo Narita International Airport in 2001, the embarrassment and shame it brought to the regime back home may have been a stain on his character and a harbinger of his downfall. But it may have also been the reason his death was exposed to the world. You see, when Japanese officials stopped him at the border, they took his fingerprints. Fingerprints which may have been used 16 years later to identify the body of a dead man in Malaysia. This would reveal that the person North Korea insisted was Kim Chol was actually their forgotten prince, Kim Jong-nam. But that's just one theory. Another was that Kim Jong-nam's identity was determined with a DNA test. Rumors flowed that his son, Kim Han-sol, now a young man in his early 20s, flew to Kuala Lumpur dressed in an officer's uniform and snuck into the morgue in the dead of night to provide a DNA sample for comparison. No one knows for sure. Malaysian officials never detailed how they confirmed the identity of the body.
We have now established that Kim Chol is Kim Jong-nam. We have fulfilled the requirement of the laws on his identification.
But it was at this moment that Kim Han-sol, a relatively unknown figure in the world's view, was thrust into the international spotlight. Not much was known about him, except for the fact that he was Kim Jong-nam's oldest son. Kim Han-sol grew up in Macau. Raised in a capitalist paradise, he got to do things that most North Korean boys his age could only dream of. He dyed his hair blonde. He got ear piercings. He explored Twitter, experimented with different religions, and even listened to Katy Perry. Like his father before him, he'd attend private international schools in Europe and make friends from all over the world. In 2011, he began attending an international secondary school in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Living in the Balkans, Kim Han-sol kept a low profile. But when he was 17, he agreed to do a television interview with Elizabeth Rehn, the former defense minister of Finland. Kim Han-sol arrives smartly dressed. He wears trendy black framed glasses with diamond-studded earrings. He's calm and composed, speaking English with effortless fluency. And then, With that same cool and casual demeanor, he does the unthinkable.
The leader now, he is your uncle, but a very young one.
Yeah, he's the youngest of the brothers.
How come that he was the one to be appointed by his father?
I'm not really sure, but my dad was definitely not really interested in politics.
Good for him.
Yeah, and I really never met them in real life, so I really don't know how he became a dictator.
He calls his uncle, Kim Jong-un, a dictator. Then Kim Han-sol thanks his parents for giving him a fresh perspective on his privilege, acknowledging the harsh reality of many people in his home country.
My parents played a big role in supporting me and always telling me, like, think about the people first before you eat that food in front of you. My mom always tried to encourage me to live a same lifestyle as the ordinary citizen so I can have a better understanding of the people. And my dad as well always told me, forget about the background and everything and live your life and understand everything. There's a lot of people who are hungry, and always just think twice and be thankful for what you have right now.
The brother of Kim Jong-un dead in a flood straight from a movie.
Two women, their identities currently unknown, appear to have rubbed poison on his face.
The probe widens in killing of North Korean leader's half-brother.
I'm Eden Lee. In our final episode, we dig into the audacious plot to assassinate Kim Jong-nam, the story of the women who killed him, and what the North Korean prince's untimely death meant for his family and his firstborn son.
What was the story behind the two women who reportedly they thought they were part of this TV show?
The CIA did its thing and somehow spirited them out of the airport, you know, through a different entrance.
This is the scoop that every journalist covering North Korea wants to uncover. Where is Kim Han-sol?
This is Big Brother. Kim Jong-nam was always looking over his shoulder. On the day he was killed, he was carrying 12 vials of VX antidote.
He was carrying only a backpack, but in that backpack apparently was an antidote to the exact kind of nerve agent that he was exposed to and subsequently died from.
But for some reason, when two women grabbed his face from behind and spread a mysterious paste across his eyes and mouth, he never thought to reach into his bag containing those life-saving cures. Nor did he go to the bathroom to wipe it off.
We don't know why he didn't use them. He did have about 20 minutes after this VX2 was smeared on his face. He was able to walk to security and ask for help and, you know, stagger to the medical clinic inside the airport. So that's one of the many mysteries about North Korea and Kim Jong-nam's death is why he didn't use the medicine that he had on him.
If anything, even if Kim Jong-nam was expecting an attack, he wasn't expecting it to happen like this. Because by the time Kim Jong-nam saw a doctor, it was too late. The amount of VX covering his nose, mouth, and eyes was almost 1.5 times the lethal dose.
This was an extremely painful death when his organs, one by one, failed and he was dead within 20 minutes. And a lot of it was caught on camera.
And that shows just how sophisticated North Korea's assassination attempts have become. Because decades ago, they were much more crude. In 1983, a trio of North Korean agents attempted to assassinate the South Korean president, Chun Doo-hwan. He was visiting what was then internationally known as Rangoon in Burma. A bomb injured 46 people and killed 21, including journalists and top Korean politicians. But the president survived. The three secret agents behind the ploy did not get away. One was shot dead. One was executed by hanging. And one was sentenced to life in prison. That Burma bombing, suspected to have been organized by none other than Kim Jong-il, taught North Korea a careful lesson. When it goes on the attack, it must be more subtle. Because the point isn't just to kill somebody, it's to send a message. The perpetrators, in other words, need to leave their mark without getting caught. By 2017, North Korea's assassins knew they couldn't make the same old mistakes. If somebody was going to take the fall for their dirty work, it would be somebody who had no association with the regime at all. They needed pawns, stooges. The more naive, the easier to manipulate, the better. Siti Aisha was perfect. She had never heard of Kim Jong-nam. She didn't even know the difference between North and South Korea. According to an article by journalist Doug Bog Clark in GQ, Siti was from Indonesia, born in an impoverished farming village called Rancho Samur, a simple and devoutly Muslim region known best for an endless horizon of rice paddies and herds of grazing water buffalo. As a young teenager, Siti devoted herself to Islam. She wore conservative clothes and answered the daily call to prayer. She spent most of her days, knife in hand, chopping turmeric, ginger, and other spices, which her father sold at local markets. But when she saw the glitz and romance of city lights on the television, she became enthralled. She vowed to escape for a better life. And at age 14, Siti left for Jakarta. Jakarta, however, didn't have much use for a 14-year-old girl with a sixth-grade education. Siti didn't find the glitz or glamour she was seeking. She found herself working 16-hour days, stitching knockoff clothes in a humid, dingy sweatshop. Siti worked tirelessly for a measly 15 cents an hour. She was rarely allowed to take a break. Even when she was, she couldn't leave. The door leading outside was locked during work hours. As Bach Clark reports, when the sweatshop owner's son began flirting with her, Siti reciprocated. It wasn't long before she got pregnant. She married, had a baby boy, and soon was raising the child alone. Siti struggled. The marriage collapsed. And before her 20th birthday, her ex-husband's parents would take custody of her baby. But Siti saw this as an opportunity to make a change, to live large in the city like she had always dreamed. She left Jakarta for Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. She also left Islam. She ditched her headscarf in favor of lipstick and short skirts. She started going to the mall, to bars, to clubs. But she also needed money. And soon, like thousands of other disadvantaged women in this region, she found herself working in Kuala Lumpur's underbelly at a massage parlor. Soon, she was leveraging her beauty and her body to make money. Her escort name was Kelly. Most nights, as dance music rumbled through the dense urban air, Siti and an array of other women, clad in heels and alluring outfits, walked to the Beach Club Cafe, a haunt nestled under a canopy of skyscrapers and palm trees. That was where many prostitutes and escorts looked for work, and where customers sought them out. And the pay was good. With just a few customers, Siti could make 3 to 4 times more in a single night as a sex worker than she used to make in a whole month at the sweatshop. But Siti did not like the work. According to Bach Clark's article, she may have taken up drugs like meth to face herself, her clients, and the realities of life in Kuala Lumpur's underworld. One night, Siti was standing by the sidewalk outside the beach club when a cab pulled up. The driver waved at CT and rolled down his window. He had a request. One of his passengers had asked him to find girls. Girls who would be comfortable smearing lotion all over strangers. But then the taxi driver said the magic words. He'd pay as much as $100 in Malaysian ringgits for each videotape. That was enough to at least discuss the opportunity further. The next day, the driver picked up CT and took her to a mall, where she met a man. He was young and thin, with a short haircut. He seemed like a straight-laced, all-business type. He called himself James, and he claimed to be Japanese. James explained he was filming a prank show, something in the vein of Candy Camera, that would play on YouTube, and it would be huge in China and Japan. It was destined to go viral. Siti listened eagerly. She was desperate to do something new with her life. She was completely unaware that James was not who he said he was. Nor was she aware that the same pitch was being given to another woman in Vietnam, a woman whose life shared striking parallels with her own. Duan Thi Huang grew up in Nha Binh, Vietnam, the daughter of poor farmers. But farm life wasn't for her. She hated working with her hands and could hardly stand the thought of butchering chickens. She decided that when she grew up, she'd go to college instead. Duan attended a few classes in Hanoi, but work was scarce. So she took the only job she could get, as a pub waitress. Hopes of becoming a white-collar professional dashed. Duan worked long hours waiting tables and quickly grew weary of the service industry. She started entertaining bigger dreams. She wanted to be on TV, to become a famous actress. In 2016, she made an appearance on National Vietnamese Television when she auditioned for the singing competition, Vietnam Idol.
Anh mong ngừng thời gian trôi để những dấu yêu sẽ không phai mờ.
Okay.
She didn't make it to the next round. Duan also made a handful of appearances on an online prank show called Quang Bek. But that experience, too, was short-lived. Soon, Duan was desperate for money, and she fell into the same pattern that had trapped Siti. It's believed that Duan became an escort. But one day, she got a life-changing phone call. It was a friend.
Do you want to work for a company making a short movie or funny video?
There was a guy, her friend explained, who was interested in hiring a few aspiring actresses. He was at the bar right now. Why not come meet him? Duan rushed to a joint called the Hay Bar to meet this talent agent. There, sitting idly at the counter, she found a Vietnamese-speaking man. He explained that he was starting an internet prank show, and it was gonna be big. He was willing to pay an actress like Duan up to $1,000 a month. Duan's heart raced. But when she asked the mysterious man for his name, he waved her off and said,
"Just call me Mr. Y."
It's worth mentioning just how popular prank shows are in Asia. Like reality television in the US, prank shows and wacky game shows are a tentpole of television culture, especially in Japan. Many of the show premises are kind of bonkers, such as this prank program, which dumps unsuspecting strangers through an elevator shaft, filming their terrified reactions as they fall to what they think is their deaths, but is actually just a slide. There are hundreds of other shows aimed at getting laughs by pranking unsuspecting marks. The reason these shows flourish may be part cultural, but it's also part legal. In the United States, tort law is strong. You can sue people for causing emotional distress. It's the reason you don't see shows like Punked or Scare Tactics anymore. But in many Eastern countries, tort payouts are prohibitively low, and most lawyers and judges will waive off distress claims. In other words, prank shows can prosper without much legal backlash. So when James explained to Siti that her job was to smear baby oil on the faces of strangers while he filmed it, Siti didn't hesitate to do it. In the grand scheme of public prank shows, the stunt was pretty tame. And after all, it paid well. Her first test run in a public mall was a glowing success, landing $100 in her pocket. Meanwhile, in Hanoi, Mr. Y was training Duan to do the same. They met outside of the city's opera house, and as a test to see if Duan was truly unafraid of touching strangers in public, he pointed out a person in the crowd and told Duan to kiss them on the cheek. Duan went for it. She passed the test. Later that evening, Mr. Y took her to a coffee shop to meet his boss. There, an older man sat, sipping coffee. Duan introduced herself and asked for his name. He said it was Hanamori, but otherwise spoke cryptically. Back in Indonesia, Siti was receiving more training. In early January 2017, surveillance footage would capture her smearing baby oil on a stranger's face at a hotel. Soon, she was practicing the stunt twice a day and becoming more comfortable pranking strangers. Midway through training, James introduced her to a friend named Chang, who is fluent in her native language of Bahasa. With the language barrier broken, the flirtatious Chang began stoking the young woman's ego. "You're going to be famous," he said. "These pranks are going to take you all over the world, to Singapore, to America even." Siti started bragging to her friends that she was about to become a star. The production team began flying Siti around, testing her prank skills at various airports. The practice sessions intensified. Chang and James brought Siti to Kuala Lumpur and began practicing the face smearing technique at the international airport, doubling her rate to $200 American per stunt. By early February, she had rehearsed it at least a dozen times. Meanwhile, in Vietnam, Duan was practicing the same stunt in Hanoi at Noi Bai Airport. According to Assassins, the 2021 documentary directed by Ryan White, Mr. Y was a demanding coach, often texting her with advice.
"Now, you must be harder when you cover the eyes. Hold it there for 2 to 3 seconds and then go down the entire face. When it sticks to the eyes, it's gonna make people puzzled and surprised. It's a good effect for the video clip."
A few days later, Mr. Y and Hanamori flew Duan to Kuala Lumpur. There, she had a giant teddy bear, the kind you might find at a carnival, and was told to use it to rehearse the prank.
"Practice with your teddy bear, all right? Tomorrow, we have a male actor, and his role will be to make it difficult for you. Don't let the male actor see us. Do not look straight at him. Don't be stressed. Act normal."
As Duan practiced in her hotel room, Siti was enjoying a night out with friends, celebrating her birthday at the Hard Rock Cafe. After blowing out the candles on a cupcake, she danced into the night, unaware that her world was about to turn upside down.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Video shows two women carrying out the airport attack with a mysterious poison.
Kim Jong-nam은 여성 암살자 두 명에게 암살당했습니다.
Two women, their identities currently unknown, appear to have rubbed poison on his face.
Authorities have confirmed it was VX nerve agent.
Within hours of Kim Jong-nam's death, Mr. Y, Chang, Hanamori, and a fourth suspect had all boarded flights out of the country. They had changed their clothes and shaved their faces and would land in Pyongyang before any of the news hit. James had disappeared without a trace. And two North Koreans, the two who had presumably helped usher the assassins through the airport, were now holed up in the embassy across town. Meanwhile, CT and Duan waited, blissfully unaware, for their next prank. In fact, 2 days after Kim Jong-nam died, Duan would return to the scene of the crime, to the airport arrivals hall. She was clueless that a major crime had been committed there days earlier, and that her so-called prank was the cause. And unlike most criminals who return to their own crime scene, Duan made no attempt to change her appearance. She wore the same shoes and kept her hair the same style. She wandered the airport aimlessly, looking down at her phone, waiting to receive a text from Mr. Y. So, lost and confused, Duan tried to text him. Quote, I today came to airport but did not see you there. You said today we'd make a video clip. I don't know what to do now. But her messages were never delivered. His phone line was disconnected. After milling about the arrivals hall, Duan left the airport and hailed a taxi. Before she could even hop in the cab, the airport security guards, who had recognized her from CCTV footage from the day of the attack, detained her. When police took Duan in custody, she complained that she hadn't been paid for her last stunt. CT was just as clueless. She didn't follow the news. So when police barged into her room at the Flamingo Hotel, she, too, thought it was all part of the prank show. Like Duan, she had no idea that someone had been assassinated at the airport. She also had no idea that James and Chang were, in fact, North Korean spies. In the Assassins documentary, CT recalled, the police asked, who are you? Are you a spy? What did you do that caused that man in the airport to die? I was confused. I didn't understand what they meant. You are involved in the premeditated murder of the Korean president's brother. I was shocked. You're kidding. I was doing a video shoot. Is this part of the video prank? Within days, both CT and Duan were in prison. The women didn't understand the seriousness of their crime until they met their lawyers. If found guilty of murder, both women would have ropes strung around their necks, and they would be executed by hanging. As evidence mounted that North Korea was responsible for the killing of Kim Jong-nam, the DPRK's ambassador to Malaysia began an aggressive campaign of denial. He dismissed any suggestion of wrongdoing. He refused to give up the North Koreans hiding in the embassy. He wouldn't acknowledge that Jong-nam died from a nerve agent. And he refused to call Kim Jong-nam by his real name, instead referring to him by the fake name on his passport, Kim Chol. The Malaysian government responded by kicking the ambassador out of the country. Pyongyang returned fire by barring all Malaysians from leaving North Korea, essentially holding all of their diplomats hostage.
The North Koreans took all of the Malaysians in Pyongyang, which I believe was 11 people, the Malaysian diplomats and their families, essentially put them under embassy arrest and wouldn't allow them to leave North Korea until the North Korean nationals in Malaysia had been allowed to leave there.
And then more international dominoes began to fall. Nuclear disarmament talks between the U.S. and North Korea disintegrated. Even China punished the North, refusing to import coal from their communist cousin. By this point, the Malaysian government was deeply embarrassed. A foreign country with which it had friendly relations had just staged a chemical attack using the world's most potent chemical weapon within its borders. And in an international airport, no less. A space symbolically shared by the whole world. Malaysia, in other words, was furious. And with suspects either having escaped or enjoying the immunity of the embassy, the country turned its attention to Siti Aisyah and Duan Ti Huang. Somebody had to be punished for Kim Jong-nam's death. And it would be these two hapless women. The scene outside of Shah Alam Courthouse was chaotic. A sea of cameras and reporters had gathered outside the building's doors, awaiting the arrival of Siti Aisyah and Duan Ti Huang. At the time, nobody knew their stories. Many believed these women were stealthy assassins, a duo of femme fatales with links to North Korea's innermost spy rings. On October 2nd, 2017, a parade of police vehicles escorted the women to the courthouse. When they emerged, their heads were wrapped in Islamic headscarves and their bodies draped in bulletproof vests. Armed guards ushered them to the courthouse as the press swarmed like paparazzi, trying to get a glimpse of the two rumored secret agents. Over the following weeks, this scene played out again and again, with the women looking more and more sullen. Midway through, the judge read an 82-page document, declaring his belief that the women had not been duped, but had in fact been willing accomplices to a North Korean murder plot. He asked the defense to prove its case. By this point, it had long been established that the women had killed Kim Jong-nam with VX nerve agent. They likely survived because they had applied it to their palms, where the skin is thicker, and had wiped the poison off in time. Some believe the North Koreans used VX2, an agent that only activates after two separate compounds are combined. If so, the low exposure may have helped keep the women alive. As the trial wore on, Duan and Siti remained in custody. Weeks blurred into months, months into years. The women were confined to separate cells, but began sharing stories by yelling through the bars. They started to joke and chit-chat and, in their words, became like sisters. As their separate defenses worked the case, neither woman knew that the highest channels of Indonesia's government were working to free Siti. Indonesia's president, Joko Widodo, was running for re-election, and Siti's trial was being closely watched by regular people back home. The president saw her release as a way to score political points and help his campaign. So he applied pressure to make something happen. It worked. On the day the women were slated to give testimony, the lead prosecutor stood up and made a special announcement that the state had decided to withdraw one of the charges, specifically that against Siti. The order came straight from the attorney general. According to those present, the judge looked baffled. The decision made no sense. The evidence for and against the two women was exactly the same. They both had been recruited with the same tactics. Both had attacked Kim Jong-nam in the same way. And they had both left the crime scene in the same manner. And nearly all of it was captured on video. And yet, CT was being let go, while Duan was still on trial. The judge, though confused, obliged.
The court has determined that CT Aisha, the first defendant, is hereby released. All right? You can go.
CT stood up, hugged Duan, and left the courtroom with a smile. Duan was extremely distraught. Now she was alone and still facing the death penalty. The truth was, government officials in Vietnam didn't have the same motivations to free Duan. It's a communist country, and it still has relations with North Korea. It didn't want to get involved. But that ambivalence left Duan trapped facing the prospect of a terrible miscarriage of justice. Her lawyers cried foul. And 1 month later, they got their wish. The court reached a deal. Rather than charge Duan with murder and have her executed, Duan would plead guilty to a charge of, quote, causing harm, and thus be jailed for just a few weeks. When Duan learned of the judgment, she had but one answer. I'm happy. 1 month after her sentence, in May 2019, Duan Thi Huong boarded a plane to Hanoi and returned home to her parents. This happy ending presents a broader problem. A man was murdered in public in one of the most brutal ways imaginable. There had been multiple witnesses, and everything was caught on camera. Experts everywhere knew who was guilty, and yet nobody was held accountable. You may recall those two North Koreans holed up in the embassy. As the hostage scenario escalated, with North Korea refusing to let Malaysians leave the DPRK, an agreement was reached. Rather than arrest the North Koreans hiding in the embassy, Malaysia would let them all go. In return, North Korea would release the Malaysian citizens. The result?
No North Koreans have ever been punished by Malaysia for assassinating a foreign national on their soil. The North Koreans who were in Malaysia and identified as being complicit in this plot, all of them were released, all of them were allowed to leave, and this is because of hostage diplomacy, one of North Korea's great tricks. There was a swap done to allow the North Koreans to leave Malaysia without facing any punishment. And so to this day, no North Korean has been punished as far as we know, certainly not in Malaysia.
To add insult to injury, Kim Jong-nam's body was not only returned to North Korea, but it was placed on the same flight that transported the North Koreans who had been complicit in his murder. He was dead, stowed in the cargo hold, and they were a few feet above him, resting easy on a flight back home, completely free of any consequences. By 2019, it was clear to North Korea that the assassination of Kim Jong-nam was a success. Unlike the plot Kim Jong-il had staged in Burma, which had led to a breakdown of relations, North Korea's relationship with Malaysia quickly returned to normal. In the words of Dr. Nam Sung-wook, quote, the Malaysian government considered the recovery of the relationship between Pyongyang and Kuala Lumpur to be more important than justice for the assassination of Kim Jong-nam. For Anna Fifield, this success has enabled Kim Jong-un to become even more ruthless.
I think we see somebody who is willing to push boundaries, to be bold, and to kind of shake up what we know. And, you know, he's almost daring the outside world, you know, what are you going to do? Yeah, it was me. What are you going to do? And the world, you know, has kind of said, not much. We're going to write a letter, you know, to quote Hans Blix from Team America, write a letter and tell you how angry we are. There hasn't really been much retribution beyond that.
Indeed, things would smooth over elsewhere too. China would drop its retaliation. The United States would hold a huge summit with former President Donald Trump, who had started his presidency extremely critical of Kim Jong-un, but would later exchange 27 letters with the Supreme Leader, telling a rally,
he wrote me beautiful letters, and they're great letters.
We fell in love.
The global order had looked the other way. In the words of Dr. Remco Brucker, an expert on North Korea at Leiden University, quote, "The international community are very good at washing away North Korea's sins for them." According to Drs. Hung-Yoon Lee, it was all part of a calculated plan, one that North Korea has been executing for decades.
All three supreme leaders of North Korea have shown a propensity to act crazy, cultivate bellicosity and weirdness, and then charm the world by dangling the possibility of peace, reconciliation, and in the meantime signing agreements with no intention of giving up its nuclear arsenal, and buying time and a lot of money in selling the same horse several times. It's been a very good, successful business model for North Korea over the past three decades.
The scheme is pretty straightforward. Act crazy. Scare the world. Force global powers to negotiate. Get sanctions lifted or make some money. Do it again.
I would say conservatively, North Korea has won about $20 billion worth of goods, cash included, all for its repeated pledges, lies. What about Team America, the United States and its allies, South Korea and Japan? Less than zero, I would say.
By 2019, the assassination of Kim Jong-nam was no longer a global outrage. It was just another strategic piece in North Korea's puzzle, another way to extort foreign powers into doing North Korea's bidding, another way for Kim Jong-un to say, "Don't mess with me."
He's sending a message. Anyone, anywhere in the world, I can get you and it will hurt. And I'm sure that there are a lot of other North Korean officials around the world who took notice of this and, you know, would definitely have thought twice about questioning anything Kim Jong-un said.
But there's still one problem for North Korea's dear leader. There remains a threat to Kim Jong-un's throne.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
If people in North Korea could know all the facts, they might not consider Kim Jong-un a legitimate leader. Not only was he Kim Jong-il's third son, his mother was also Japanese, an irrevocable stain on his bloodline. And if leadership were to truly abide by Confucian principles, where leadership is passed down to each first male heir, then the real leader of North Korea would not be Kim Jong-un. It would be the son of Kim Jong-nam, Kim Han-sol.
He is a male from the Kim family. He therefore has the same old Pekdu blood in his veins. He's the kind of person that Kim Jong-un would want to make sure could never rival him.
And that means, like his father before him, Kim Hans-ho's life is at risk. On the day his dad was murdered, Kim Hans-ho looked outside the windows of his home in Macau and noticed something strange, something worrying.
Kim Hans-ho found the security guard outside their house missing. Something was wrong. And when you know North Korea, of course they're going to come after the family too. A North Korean offender, when it comes to treason, is sent to a prison, a concentration camp, with his entire family, parents, grandparents, children, grandchildren.
Feeling unsafe, he picked up the phone.
Kim Han-sol called Adrian Hong, who was in the U.S., and sought help running away.
Adrian Hong is the leader of the Chunlima Civil Defense, now called Free Chosun, a group dedicated to overthrowing the North Korean regime. To date, Free Chosun had spent most of its resources helping North Korea defectors escape the dictatorship. Kim Han-sol had met the group years earlier through a mutual friend. On the day of his father's death, Kim Han-sol would beg Adrian Hong for help. He needed a way to escape. Adrian told Kim Han-sol to leave Macau with his mother and sister immediately, to head straight for Taipei. Then Adrian called a friend, a U.S. Marine, Iraq War veteran and activist named Christopher An.
Adrian called Christopher An, asked him, "Where are you?" An happened to be visiting the Philippines on vacation, quite close to Kim Han-sol.
Christopher jumped into action.
Within 24 hours, Christopher An met Kim Han-sol and his mom and his sister at the major airport in Taiwan, Taipei.
Christopher took the family to a private airport lounge to rest. Meanwhile, Adrian was calling dignitaries around the world, asking if they would take in 3 royal North Korean refugees. The Netherlands answered the call. Christopher bought the family 3 plane tickets to Amsterdam, but when they tried to go through security, a guard stopped them. So they returned to the airport lounge to reassess their options. That's when 2 men appeared. It was the CIA.
CIA folks showed up and demanded that Christopher An turn over the Kim family to them. Chris An said, "No, I've not broken any law. They don't want to go with you. How can I trust you?" So for over 24 hours, Christopher An stayed with Kim Han-sol and his family at the airport lounge in Taiwan and then purchased new tickets for the 3 and arranged for the Kim family to be flown over to Amsterdam.
The CIA refused to let the family out of their sight. So, before the flight, Christopher gave Kim Han-sol a hug and said goodbye, handing him over to the American officials. The CIA would escort the family through boarding and sit with them on the plane. Free Chosun had arranged for high-level government officials, including a Dutch human rights lawyer, to meet Kim Jong-nam's family when they landed at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam.
At the airport, they were to be greeted by humanitarian NGOs.
But when the plane landed, the family disappeared.
The CIA did its thing and somehow spirited them out of the airport, you know, through a different entrance.
Now, more than 5 years later, nobody has seen Kim Han-sol since. Nobody outside of the CIA knows where he or the rest of Kim Jong-nam's family is. But it's believed they are now under the protective custody of a friendly nation. Where is anybody's guess?
This is the scoop that every journalist covering North Korea wants to uncover. Where is Kim Han-sol? I don't think anybody really knows. Maybe he went to Holland. He had some links to France. He had been at school in Belgrade. I don't know. Could be in France. He could be in the United States. We don't know where he is, but we know that he is living under the protection of a friendly state somewhere.
But as long as Kim Han-sol is alive, there may be hope for the people of North Korea. Because somewhere, the true prince awaits.
there are laws that say North and South Koreans shouldn't interact with each other, even outside of Korea. Me and my South Korean friends, at first it was kind of awkward when I first met them. But then, little by little, we started understanding each other. We share our stories from back home and realize how similar we are. Same language, same culture. And it's just political issues that divide the nation in half.
You can be very grateful to your parents that they have raised you to think yourself. Do you have dreams that you could go back to North Korea and try to do something to influence in a good way?
Yeah, of course. I've always dreamed that one day I will go back and make things better and make it easier for the people there. I also dream of unification.
Big Brother is a production of School of Humans and iHeartRadio, and hosted by me, Eden Lee. Lucas Riley is our writer, co-director, and associate producer. Amelia Brock is our senior producer, co-director, and editor. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, Elsie Crowley, and Jason English. Our fact-checkers are Austin Thompson and Aaron Blakemore. Music composed by Jason Todd Shannon and Tune Welders. Original score mix by Vic Stafford. Audio editing by Jesse Neiswanger. Sound design and mix by Harper W. Harris. Audio correction by Josh Fisher. Voice acting in Big Brother performed by Mark Chung, Jun Yoon, Sage Kim Gray, Sean McKeague, Jennifer Sun Bell, Mike Coscarelli, Daniel Kim, Judy Alice Lee, Yuri Nam, KT Wong, Jason Todd Shannon, Ben Holst, Tiago Lima, and Daniel Taehyung Kim. Production support was provided by Lauren Kelly. And our logo illustration was designed by Lucy Quintanilla. We'd like to recognize the work of Suki Kim, Ryan White, Jessica Hargrave, Doug Bach-Clark, and Yoji Gomi. And give special thanks to Ryan Murdoch, Will Pearson, and Daisy Church. A sincere thank you to Henrik Lindberg and Axel Hogstrom of Parade Media. And a heartfelt acknowledgement to all of our experts, Sandra Fahey, Anna Fifield, Sue Kim, Tung Yoon Lee, Bradley Martin, Michael Madden, Jenny Town, and Benjamin Young. Sound for Big Brother was licensed from the Associated Press, Agence France-Presse, Reuters, The Star Malaysia, Kini TV, the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, C-SPAN, freesound.org, and Critical Past. If you enjoyed the podcast, help us get the word out by leaving a rating in your favorite podcast app. I'm Eden Lee, and this is Big Brother. Thanks for listening.
School of Humans.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
What if we told you about a major breakthrough on awesome savings on all-inclusive beach vacays?
OMG, this could break the case.
Case? I'm talking about CheapCaribbean.com. It's full of hot savings. At CheapCaribbean.com, score an extra $175 off site-wide on vacations of 4 nights or more now through June 3rd. A swim up bar in Punta Cana or dip your toes in the sand on the shores of Cancun.
We gotta take this show on the road.
Start at CheapCaribbean.com.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.